There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
You hurt your throat. I've never heard of anyone hurting their throat.
No, I hurt my throat. And then also my whole hotel room just reeks of weed and peanut butter and farts.
Are we recording here?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Welcome to the show, everyone. That's Marcus Parks. I'm Ben Kissel. We got Henry over in Atlanta. How you doing, buddy?
Doing great. Regency Suites. Come on by. It needs a woman's touch.
I can imagine.
Let's just bags of grease everywhere. Right. There was a bit with peanut butter, and I literally, I got peanut butter all over my hotel room.
So it's just, if the Rolling Stones never had sex, what would their hotel room have looked like?
It would just look like this, just cigarette butts
and
old beers and just the smell of the ozone of internet burning with porn.
Just
like you can smell the Wi-Fi being used.
For some reason, I just imagine a pentagram just smeared on the wall in peanut butter.
Well,
you know, just everything.
I will say this to anybody: if you're feeling satanic, do what I've been doing, which is take off all your clothes, which is a given.
Yeah.
But then I've been listening to Reverend C.J. Thompson, the gospel music, just getting fucking blitzkrieg hammered by myself in a hotel room, and just smoking weed and dancing, like literally dancing like a Native American, like going like oh, like dancing back and forth. I've been alone for a while.
Yeah. Well, you don't sound like it. You know, these are all normal thoughts. So obviously,
I told someone I did this on set, and they're just like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Nobody comes here."
Yeah. I feel like every time somebody has a show that they're the star of and that show is filming, they tend to have sex with a bunch of chicks or like have friends.
No, we're doing shit a new way.
Your new Hollywood, huh?
This is new Hollywood. It's called play with your balls until nothing interests you about your dick.
That's what it's called. Oh, that's sad. Never. You always want to maintain interest in your penis.
Always.
And when you lose it, you know, that's really sad.
I hate it.
Yeah. All right. So we have so much to talk about.
Speaking of hating penis, there's some boys out there that really hated some penis after meeting members of our government.
That's right. Satanism in the Government Part 2, the Franklin cover-up.
The segue this time.
You did it. You did it. It was very good. Marcus has been shattered. Henry, you are so lucky not to have had to see Marcus's shattered, beautiful blue eyes just crying on a daily basis because of this story.
As I said on the last episode, at the end of the last episode, this is the first thing. This is the 120th episode out of 120 episodes. This is the first thing that has ever given me legit nightmares.
Yeah.
Like three nights in a row, I could not sleep. Like I could not wait to get fucking wasted so I can finally sleep. And I finally did.
That's
good. Great. No, I did that the last two nights. I tried to catch up and fill up some gas because basically you and I had a conversation while I was in the aquarium where you sounded like Rust Cole and you were talking about like the numbers don't add up. You were just saying sounds like this. And I was in front of a beautiful beluga whale tank. And I was like, I'll take care of it. Let me do some research. And so I've been researching and it's pretty tough.
That's so tough. I wish I could just see a thought bubble of the beluga whale and it would just be like, how did he get out there? I've been stuck in here. Now, how did he get out? The only beluga whale to ever escape. Must be very confusing for these poor belugas.
He must be the king of the whale. Oh, I wish that I could be with him and his kingdom. Oh, look at him eating a corn dog. I wonder what that's like. All
they'll
I
never
need
know.
Is kelp.
Yeah.
Stupid beluga whales. I gotta say one thing, man. Manta rays, they got big pussies.
We got to get to this story. We haven't spoken too long, but I want to get back to that big pussy thing. But Marcus,
So let me just again do a little bit of a caveat for this episode.
Yeah,
this episode's particularly intense. What we were saying is it may be doing like a little bit of a drinking game where anytime you feel like staring off into the distance, like you're the last tombstone in a drowning graveyard, take a drink. Every time that you want to walk off the face of the earth to icy grip of death, sure. Take a drink.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And, you know, I know Henry suggested you take your clothes off, but put your clothes back on if you
put your clothes
you
on securely. have a fucking glass of bourbon.
Yeah, go out to the liquor.
This is not like partying around. We're all going to have a fun road trip podcast. Right. This is have a glass of bourbon. Listen to this at fucking 12:30 at night with nobody around, especially if you're feeling regrets.
Yep. This is our old sad country.
All right.
Here. I mean, if you want to look into it, it's very possible that the first season of True Detective, the whole conspiracy, was based on the Franklin cover up.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is entirely true. All the stuff that we found information, it's been ridiculously covered up. Mm-hmm. The documentary, like even before you see this podcast or you listen to this podcast, watch the Conspiracy of Silence documentary on YouTube. It is a must see. It's intense. All right, so Marcus, are you going to start this song?
I'm going to start it off. I'm going to start it up off with a quote. This was said by former CIA director William Colby to state senator John DeCamp, okay, who wrote the Franklin cover-up, of which most of our research was taken from. This is what he said. "What you have to understand, John, is that sometimes there are forces and events too big, too powerful, with so much at stake for other people or institutions that you cannot do anything about them, no matter how evil or wrong they are, and no matter how dedicated or sincere you are, or how much evidence you have. This is simply one of the hard facts of life you have to face."
Yeah, it's like every
going against the M&M Corporation. If you want, it's really hard.
Absolutely, I was going to say that's how the New York Knicks felt about the Chicago Bulls in the mid 90s. Am I right? Michael Jordan, was he a pedophile?
Franklin child prostitution ring allegations. The allegations took place between 1988 and 1991, and they involved an alleged child sex ring serving prominent citizens of the Nebraska Republican Party as well as high level U.S. politicians.
So basically,
now we only legally have to keep saying alleged and supposed. It's pretty much like we have to legally say that. But again, I want to say it's pretty fucking intense.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, again, these are Nebraska high powered politicians. So basically, they were only the only people in town with a suit jacket. And then you just immediately get elected because you look classy.
A firm handshake and blue eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your tits don't immediately wiggle. You have to have hard tits.
Oh, I've actually heard that. You know, that's hurt Miss Hillary Clinton in the past couple of runs. Not a hard enough bosom.
Old cardboard box chest Hillary Clinton.
That's right.
All right, let's get into this disgusting story.
And the allegations also claim that the alleged sex ring was led by a cult of devil worshippers involved in the mutilation, sacrifice, and cannibalism of numerous children.
A defamation of Satanism.
Again, a defamation of Satanism, or we'll get into that later on.
Yes.
The allegations centered on the actions of one man, Larry King Jr., who ran the now defunct Franklin Community Federal Credit Union in Omaha, which is created to serve a poor neighborhood in Omaha, Nebraska.
Now, we're not talking about everybody's favorite Jew suspenders wearing Larry King. We're talking about like a big, he was the head of the Black Republicans of Nebraska.
Yeah.
And quite simply, the most evil fuck who ever existed.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone that's worse than this guy.
I was going to say maybe like an Alan Keyes, but I think Alan Keyes actually looks very good. He's the only other Black Republican I can think of.
So during the 70s and 80s, Larry King ran the Franklin Credit Union. He ran it as essentially a Ponzi scheme, and he looted over $40 million from the Federal Credit Union. For example, he rented a townhouse that was, I think it cost $5,000 a month in rent. He made $17,000 a year.
And I say that he threw these parties in order to get grants for the Franklin Credit Union in Washington, D.C. Basically, you go wine dine a bunch of politicians. But basically, you're finding out that he's just taking the money.
Yeah, yeah. He's just taking all of the money. And he was a very prominent politician. He sang the national anthem at the Republican National Convention in both 1984 and 1988.
He's got a thick voice.
A beautiful voice. A very good voice.
No, he looks like a male Oprah Winfrey.
A little bit. Twice he got to sing the national anthem, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Twice. 84 and 88. Yeah.
You can go anywhere with a beautiful voice.
Yeah. For some reason, the fact that this all takes place in Nebraska, I just can't help to think, but like Bruce Dern and Matt Forte walking in there, you know, and just goofing around because, you know, Bruce has lost his mind a little bit.
Yeah, just wants to have sex with boys.
Yeah, yeah.
So 1988.
Don't laugh like that after you say the sentence. He just wants to have sex with boys. What's wrong with you?
Oh, there's going to be a lot of that.
So in Omaha, among the black population, everyone knew that Larry King had a dark side.
This woman I read right here said this sentence about Lawrence King. Let's call him Lawrence King.
Yeah, Lawrence King. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're doing the Larry Fishburne to Lawrence Fishburne
thing. Yeah, let's give him a Lawrence. We're going Lawrence. Lawrence Fishburne loves boys. He loves them like he shouldn't. Ulysses Washington said that. No, I'm not sure who she was. But
you mean Lawrence King. You said Lawrence Fishburne.
Lawrence Fishburne.
No, another accusation.
Lawrence Fishburne loves boys just because he has sons. He loves his sons. Mm-hmm. But this Lawrence E. King, he loves boys.
Right. Yes.
And he loves them like he shouldn't.
Exactly. And of course, there were tons of rumors all around Omaha about the pedophile ring. People knew that some shit was up all over Omaha. And Larry King, he was not trying to hide this shit at all. He thought he was invincible. There were multi-million-dollar renovations to his office. He demanded in his offices that a bedroom be built, and the door was locked. Entry was prohibited to everyone, and King was the only one allowed inside except for quote-unquote friends that accompanied him inside.
Okay.
And Michael Jackson had the same exact thing with his teddy bear room that was built next to his bedroom. Also, the big thing is that a lot of these $40 million came from directly. It was basically a lot of the Franklin Credit Union would have the accounts of high-ranking members of a place called Boys Town, which was essentially a fake city built for boys. It was for the embetterment of young males, which is, you can imagine, when you build a place called Boys Town, it turns into a child farm.
Yeah.
And that's what it became.
You can't call it child farm, though.
No,
that's a dead giveaway.
You can't call it child farm.
Any man who would ever go to Boys Town should be arrested immediately.
Immediately. Yes. And by the way, Boys Town is the richest square mile on the face of the earth.
Yep. And so it was considered a city and a charitable organization, so it got crazy tax breaks. So, and there's also a belief that a lot of the $40 million that he embezzled went back to the actual shareholders at Boys Town to be used as rat holes to hold his money until he got out of jail.
So did they have, like, boy mayors? And was everyone just a child, like little kid cops?
That's you've been tricycling? You didn't want to win the election of being boy mayor because you got a promotion. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It wasn't good.
No.
So it seems the whole time that Larry King, or Lawrence King, his partner in crime was a guy named Craig Spence.
Okay.
Craig Spence was a correspondent for ABC in Vietnam, and he eventually made his way into the blackmailing business, blackmailing right-wing politicians in Japan.
Are you telling me that the U.S. sent some nice boy over to Vietnam, just to, you know, or ABC sent a nice kid over to Vietnam, and then he came back all messed up?
Yeah.
And then he committed, like, crimes against other people?
Oh, absolutely.
Did anybody come back better
from Vietnam?
I want to know somebody.
My father did. Because he was stationed on a submarine in the Gulf of Mexico. Him and his boys literally just play like McHale's Navy type pranks on each other.
Yeah, it sounds like that movie Down Periscope.
Yes.
So Spence, he had a gigantic house in Washington. The house was bugged from floor to ceiling. So this guy had dirt on everybody all the time. He always bragged about his CIA connections. We're going to get into the CIA later.
Yeah. Well, he also probably could have been a floating member of the CIA. What we learn about, the more and more you read into this stuff, you learn about how many of these guys aren't even on fucking pay. They don't even have paperwork. Yeah. They're literally getting paid in brown paper bags back and forth. And sometimes they don't even know that they're working for the CIA. They think they're working for another company.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this guy, Craig Spence, he was actually busted in 1989. This is from a Washington Times article. The article was called "Homosexual Prostitution Inquiry Ensnares VIPs with Reagan and Bush." Now, the Washington Times article alleged that key officials in the Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush administrations were connected to an elaborate Washington, D.C. male prostitute ring and reported that two of these prostitutes even entered the White House at night.
Now, Spence actually went to jail for this, right?
Yes, he did.
This makes the whole, like, Ronald Reagan being grandpa really disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, because it's almost like Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
But yeah, so actually Craig Spence, he didn't actually go to jail. He committed suicide less than a year after that Washington Times article came out. And we're going to be seeing a lot of those throughout this story. A lot of people committing suicide.
Right.
People,
this is a suspicious suicide, I would...
very suspicious suicide.
The CIA actually used a term called get suicided.
Yeah.
There was talking about this guy named Webb who was he was this journalist. I forget what story he was covering, something to do with Afghanistan, and they said he got suicided because they found him dead of two self-inflicted gunshot wounds to the face. So it's like, and they were like, and doctors, the coroner came out, so it was like, you know what, you know, it's not very common. You see the old two to the head.
Yeah.
It's mostly the one, but it seems like he just shot once through his mouth because he was a pussy and then shot himself in the head proper.
Right. Yeah,
that seems rough.
If you're the hitman that's going over to see this guy and you have to make it look like a suicide, that's just a bad day.
Yeah.
That's why you can't ask these people to get suicided on Mondays.
That's why you got to get these guys. You take the corpse, right? You strangle them, dress them up as a bellhop, take a bunch of bananas at the top of a flight of stairs, and just throw them down the flight of stairs.
That's another way to do it.
Yeah.
So it's said that on these tours that Craig Spence took of the White House at night with the male prostitutes, it is said that one of the people along was an underage 15-year-old boy named Paul Banaki.
Okay.
Now, Paul Banaki is the centerpiece of this entire investigation. This is the main witness. This is the guy that tells us more about the Franklin cover-up than anybody else. He was kidnapped at the age of 6 and was put into sex slavery from the ages of 6 to 17. Now, I will warn you right now, I'm going to be reading a lot of testimony from Paul Banaki. I'm going to be reading a lot of statements from him. They're fucked up.
Yeah, so take a drink now.
This is a drink time, right.
Yeah, take a drink now. This is going to be really, really bad.
Let me ask real quick, did he come from a troubled home as well? Because a lot of the times the way they describe these guys getting swept up into this scene is because they were already partying, but it feels like that's just defaming the victims.
Yeah, sometimes that is true, but not all the time. I think Paul Banaki was, he was just a regular kid.
I was trying to think, I mean, it's impossible not to be an underage 15-year-old. Right? I mean, maybe like the only overage 15-year-old, LeBron James. You ever see him at 15?
You're big.
So you're saying the bigger you are, physically larger you are, the more capable you are of accepting being molested.
No, I'm not. Well, sure.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah, well, we could say sure.
All right. This is from court testimony. This is the judge asking him, where were the parties? He answered, down in Washington, D.C., there was sex between adult men and other adult men, but most of it had to do with young boys and young girls with the older folks, specifically for sex with minors. Also in Washington, D.C., there were parties after a party. There were a lot of parties where there would be senators and congressmen who had nothing to do with the sexual stuff, but there were some senators and congressmen who stayed for the pedophile parties afterwards. On a lot of the trips he took us on, he had us. I mean, I met some people that I don't feel comfortable telling their name because I don't want to. And the judge said, are you scared? And he said, yes.
Yeah. The after party and then the after party. And then, of course, the hotel lobby there just full of people, adults having
and
sex with
the kids. And then the 24/7 McDonald's.
Yep.
And then the Waffle House.
Oh, my.
So but what he said by he would take us, Larry King used to fly children all around the country for these parties. And in fact, there were...
I feel like, let's not use the word parties. I mean, I love a party. Yeah. You know?
Maybe I love a party.
An event?
I don't know what else to call it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, what would the kid call it?
Let's call them bouts.
Yeah, about. That seems to be a proper term.
And he would a lot of time he would use the Offutt Air Force Base.
We're going to get to Offutt way.
Of course, but that's like a part. That's just where he'd go and pick them. That was where they had the tarmac.
Yeah. And he had you had these receipts for airplane rides. You had manifests, okay. And Larry King himself had 200 receipts for planes chartered that always had 5 to 8 unnamed passengers.
Okay,
it never said who.
If you really want to transport boys around, what you got to do is have them all stand on each other's shoulders, like, and put a big trench coat over them and a hat, and tell them that this is your lawyer.
Well, you know, actually, Henry, that usually works if you want to transport cartoon cats. That's actually good for cartoon cats, and then next thing you know, you realize your lawyer's been a cat this whole time.
Yeah. Oh man. Oh, no wonder he keeps fucking destroying my couch.
Isn't that terrible?
I've got the first name. Right now, I'm going to give you the first name out of all the politicians that we're going to have here. And this is a surprising name that Bernanke specifically named Congressman Barney Frank as having participated.
Ooh, I can see it.
Yeah, I can see it too.
Can you imagine him just sucking on your belly button?
Ugh.
He told the judge that he had relationships with him in Washington, D.C., and was flown to Massachusetts for sex in the basement of Frank's Boston home.
Just the annoying way Barney Frank would molest. He is the most aggravating man to begin with, and that if he's molesting you, that's just tough to deal with.
All right, let's read this, please.
All right.
So, okay, I also want to say this court testimony came out in 1999.
Yeah.
This is way after the time period, because this is when they finally, basically, they got sick of being, I mean, their lives were destroyed. Because a lot of times, these things would be done, they would do these things in his presence, they would give them drugs, they would give them money, they would buy them fancy coats and hats.
Right. And of course, these victims, that's why the testimony was so controversial, because it's sort of a catch-22 where it's like, you've been far too victimized to be trusted. Your brain, your brain's peanut butter. You're destroyed. We can't take you seriously.
All right. So here's more court testimony from Paul Bernanke. They put guns up to my head, had guns put in my mouth. Larry King sent out boys, men to jump me. He had them pretty well beat the tar out of me from the waist down so nobody would see the marks. I had my fingers broken. I can remember them burning me with hot instruments, placing stuff inside me, almost what I call a cattle prod, but it would be put inside and then they'd shock me inside my
trails.
Yes, and they would...
You mean electrically heated?
They would put it in and then push a button and it would shock me.
Done by Larry King at his direction.
At his direction. If they wanted to get something passed through the legislature, he would put some people that were against it in a compromising position by using us, boys and girls.
Was this by your being the sexual partner of that person?
Yes.
Any estimates of how often you participated as the sexual partner of one of these persons that he wanted to get some kind of control over?
There were times when it would be 4 or 5 in a night, sometimes dozens of times, with the same person.
Take a drink.
it sounded like a real wet fart.
Yeah, I thought that was a fart. That's what I thought, too. I was like, Henry, I thought we talked. No fart noises.
No fart noises. All right, everyone. Well, that was Marcus and Henry in a new Broadway play called Pillow Talk.
And so, that's pretty rough.
Yeah.
So it's just the perfect. So again, MK Ultra. This is taking place what, in 1981?
This is more like 85, 86.
85 and 86. So again, this is way out of the official timeline of the MK Ultra thing, and they're doing the same exact shit.
Well, MK Ultra, this doesn't seem to have the end game of like, we're making Jason Bourne. Like, they are just like, we're making it. We're just going to shatter lives.
Yeah. This is just making sex slaves. That's really, all it is. It's like we were talking about the other day on the last episode with the Finders. Mm-hmm. Is that their entire purpose was to break down children so they could sell them into sex slavery.
Yeah.
That was their, but these guys, their thing, well, I mean, we'll get into the sex slavery later.
This is the one positive of all this is if you are a victim of the toy box killer, you know, and you got to escape, if you're the gal who escaped, you can read this story and feel lucky. You know, you can be like, well, at least I'm not.
At least it was only a couple days.
Yeah, a couple of days, you know.
Yeah, it wasn't 9 years.
Yeah. At least I'm not Mr. Bernanke, you know. So you got to look on the brighter. It's like, that's gave me good perspective when I read Damien Eccles' book about solitary confinement. And I said, I'm not going to feel so, angry about comedy sometimes because I say I'm not in solitary, you know.
Jesus Christ.
So Paul Bernanke told investigators that the sex ring was based out of Offutt Air Force Base near Omaha. And he said that he had been taken there to be abused many, many times. He said that he was trained by tortures, heavy drugging, sexual degradation, as Henry was saying, breaking these people down.
Yeah.
Now, here is where it starts getting a little weird.
Oh, here it starts to get
this
weird.
This is where it gets weird. This, okay. This is the weird part.
Because I know so far a child has been penetrated in their anus by a heated prong. So.
Yes.
But now it's going to start to get weird. Okay.
In a national sense.
I see.
It's starting to get weird. Now, off at Air Force Base, this was on the day of September 11th, 2001. This was where President George W. Bush went from all the way from Florida. He went all the way from Florida to Omaha, Nebraska to have the very first planning session for 9/11, the first actual national briefing.
Also, it's one of our main, I did some research, it's one of our main nuclear hubs in the country. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, there's a lot of the feeling is that if there was nuclear war, like globally, it would be, the United States center of the nuclear planning would happen at Offutt. Also, Warren Buffett was there on the day of September 11th, and he had brought the two companies, the entire companies that were on the exact floors that the plane hit when it hit, to a charitable golf game. At Offutt Air Force Base. Coincidence?
It could be.
Yes.
Maybe. No, but Marcus
yes,
and I
but
were
I did
actually
read about that. Yeah.
Marcus and I were just talking about that yesterday. North Dakota, South Dakota as well. Those states are off the map. Those were all our hard target silos are.
Yeah. Though they were all gone. And there's other stuff coming in out of Nebraska, especially the Franklin Credit Union, the Iran-Contra affair.
Right.
It said that a lot of the money from that was funneled through the Franklin Credit Union. It seems to
I
me
want, like a shirt that just has an outline of the state of Nebraska with all this information, and then Nebraska's be like, not so boring anymore, am I? Thank you very much.
The chapter two of the Franklin cover-up is called Nebraska is Death-Laced.
Nebraska is like it's like when you see somebody who dresses really, really well and they're like really super polished, and then you get to their house and you realize they want to do nothing but eat your butt, you know? That's it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
Well, it's very interesting. To me, and what we said before, is like we're going to get a lot more horrible details here. But again, the overall assumption of now, I'm almost convinced that it's not satanic. It's not magical. There's not even a reptilian around, because I think even the reptiles would be upset, because they would be like, why are you fucking them? You should be eating them.
but it'd be nicer in a way.
I think it's almost nicer. But I think that it's a secret keeping organization. That's why all this shit is put through these things, because they get dirt all over these guys so that nobody can budge and nobody can move these incredible, because Iran-Contra was then tied to how much other bullshit. I was reading about Iran-Contra, which we could do a whole fucking, you could do an entire podcast about, about like, you know, the connections to that and how the runoff from that money went to help Osama bin Laden get trained in Afghanistan. And it's massive.
Yeah.
It's massive.
And there
it's
was also stuff with the Colombians, like the drug money was also funneled through a lot of this stuff.
Right.
So that's how we started getting sweet plantains.
So, yeah, that's what it's all about.
Nebraska.
So basically 9/11 was caused so Bush had a reason to go to this military base outside of Omaha.
Yeah, just to get his rocks off.
You know, when you're debating
boy.
Going in and invading two countries, it's good to have fun around. You know, you've got to be comfortable and
have a bout. You know, get some beers.
Yeah. And so you ask, okay, yes, all this stuff is pretty weird. The Bush, George Bush Jr. may be involved, but you know who was implicated by several different witnesses was George Bush Sr.
Okay.
Yes. And they said they saw him at one party paying for some 14-year-old black kid named Brent.
Yeah.
To leave with him.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I don't believe it.
And that must have been boring.
When was have you ever met a black dude named Brent? That story is flawed.
Well, this girl, her name was Lisa. She was an alleged child prostitute. She testified to the social worker named Julie Walters that she had met Vice President George Bush at the Republican convention where Lawrence King sang the national anthem. Now, this little girl, Lisa, she was poor as fuck. She came from a horrible background. She doesn't know who the vice president is. She doesn't know what the Republican National Convention is. This other girl, Eulis Washington, she said that at one particular party, she was the one that saw George Bush Sr. pay King money and then leave with the black dude named Brent.
And this was
the party where Alicia This was, I believe, it was the party where Alicia was told to dress in a negligee and sit on a couch, and that everyone could do whatever they want to her sexually, but not penetrate her.
We'll get to the, later. That comes with the Alicia Ward block.
Okay.
Yes, I thought it was the Alicia Owen. I'm sorry.
Sorry. That comes Alicia Owen. This is Ulysses Washington.
Okay.
But
yeah,
how all of this ties in even further to George W. Bush and how it ties into Paul Bernanke is that Bernanke said that when he was 10 to 14 years old, he was used as a decoy in malls and parks to lure other children his age near an automobile so that the adult members could grab the victims, force them into the cars. Sure. Paul and another youth would jump on the victims, chloroform them, and then the victims would be taken to a secluded location and auctioned off in places like Las Vegas, Nevada, Toronto. Bernanke also said that the base in Nevada is about 50 miles north of Las Vegas on an airstrip. There were kids that were placed in unmarked planes operated by, right. He said, foreigners with accents wearing turbans.
Wouldn't it be weird if instead of going to sexual slavery, they went into like those places? Like, you remember the movie The Toy?
Yeah.
Where it was just like, they just go to these like perfect places that everyone's all afraid because they think it's this big sex slave like trade, but it's really buying kids and sending them to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
That would be nice. Yeah, sort of a golden ticket situation.
No. They were also putting campers and they were drugged when they were putting the campers in case the cops stop them. There was no Richard Pryor at the end of the road for these boys, Henry.
Yeah.
But then also, Bernanke said that he was involved in taking a little boy named Johnny Gosch.
Yes.
Johnny Gosch was the kid that was featured in the Michael Aquino sexual allegations tape. And Michael Aquino also comes into this story as the dude that they called the Colonel, and he'd show up at a lot of Larry King's parties.
Yeah, yeah. This is all together. Now, Johnny Gosch, Paul Bernanke said that he was involved in kidnapping this kid, Johnny Gosch, and Johnny Gosch supposedly shows up years later at the White House.
Yeah, now this Glennon fellow, right?
Now, this is Jeff Gannon. He served as a poll reporter serving for the younger Bush in the first administration. He had also advertised himself as a male escort, charging $200 an hour. Like, now, Ben, I know you know some stuff about this part of the case, because this is like hardcore politics.
I don't think it's him. That's what I'm going to say. I watched a lot of this this Gannon character. If you get molested a whole bunch of times and stuff, and then they promise you a job, it better be better than that.
Yeah, that's
I'm sorry. I already know all the secrets about foreign policy because I was blowing you while you guys were talking about the Cold War and things.
It was you that was blowing me.
Yeah, so I already know what I'm doing. Just get me into a security position where maybe I can have some foreign policy, some real opinions on something that matters.
I just want to be a cub reporter in the press pool.
I mean, he got the lowest job. I mean, that's the slap in the face.
So I just want to clean the water fountains.
Yeah, you just want to be. So we just made your life miserable for 20 years. You want to be the janitor.
I know you put that electric bulb in my butthole and maybe jump up and down and skip it. But
yeah.
I actually would rather sell hot dogs outside of the White House.
Are you sure? I mean, you can have any position you want.
I'm a simple man who just likes mustard and tubed meat, as you can tell. Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, yeah. very good.
Very good. So this is...
But this is a very, very fun conspiracy theory.
It's a fun conspiracy.
The man, he won't take a DNA test.
There's nothing fun about this. Nothing fun. Because this stuff's interesting. But they fucked all these kids. They kept fucking the kids.
They did. And, really, people, they're just so quick to be like, that's impossible. But, in places overseas, Born in a Brothel is a great documentary about it. The human sex trade is a very real thing.
It's very real.
And as a matter of fact, there was just a fellow up in Harlem that was caught with like two kids that he had kidnapped and was about to send into put them into one of the veins of the system and have them flow all around the country. So this is very real.
There was a woman who was just kidnapped outside of the Port Authority here in New York City. She made it all the way to Utah.
That's right.
Before, and she was in the sex slavery trade the entire wait, sex slavery in America is very, very real.
And you say to yourself,
like, and of course, like people say to themselves, like, okay, yes, it's real, but there's no way that the government could be involved in this. There's no way that the people in higher echelons of power can be involved in this. And let me tell you about the people in the higher echelons of power. I mean, this is not in, of course, this is a terrible dictator, Muhammad Gaddafi. Like, Gaddafi, it just came out today that that this guy kept sex dungeons in Tripoli University so he could rape students after lectures.
And of course, when after the invasion in Libya there, they toured his house, and he had a lot of John Wayne Gacy rooms. In other words, no one was allowed in except for him.
Yeah.
And they were just torture dungeons as well.
I mean, yes,
it's
he was
entirely
a blood...
real. It's and but the thing is that at least it's all, what's fucked up is that they do it just to do it. We do it here with political gain involved.
Yeah.
We're doing it here in order to get things over on people. Like it's not, it's again, it's not, it's, it is about the sex, but it's about building this boys club. It's about building this. Well, if you want in on the real power players, well, you got to come to the after party.
I mean, it's
you
the
have
true
to be able
test.
To watch what happens at the after party and not open your mouth.
And we have now gotten to the biggest after party there is, the biggest boys club for the elite in the entire world, Bohemian Grove.
Now, I'm going to say it again. Take a drink now.
Yeah. And on this one, after the end of this, I'm going to play you something.
Yeah, it'll be good. Yeah, so let's get in here. Now, this is...
So now, Bohemian Grove, we know, well, yeah, it's a bunch of places where people go and they, you know, they funnel each other and they talk about rockets. And then sometimes Harry Shearer's there. What could possibly be so bad at Bohemian Grove?
And if you get a chance, one of our favorite guys around, Alex Jones, he's got a great video of himself outside of the Grove and just fat and just screaming. So
he's having trouble. His voice is going, man.
Real fast.
Not good.
Paul Benaki, he insisted that all of this took place at the base of a 40-foot owl.
Okay.
And that the location was somewhere near Sacramento. He said that they landed in Sacramento and they drove somewhere with very tall trees.
Okay.
Bohemian Grove.
Okay, yeah.
So, take that drink.
God,
there was a cage with a boy in it who wasn't wearing anything. They told me to fuck the boy and stuff. At first I said no, and they held a gun to my balls and said do it or else lose them. We did this stuff.
It's not funny.
No, but I mean, honestly, if I want to do that to some, I want to have a daughter. Just so when she starts dating when she's 17 or maybe 27, I can have a gun to a dude's balls and just be like,
you're no different than them.
No.
Way to ruin the mood, Ben.
Sorry. All right, go back. Yeah, testimony. Sorry.
We did this stuff. And by the way, when I say we did this stuff, I'm not going to read that part of the testimony.
It's too bad?
It's gratuitous. He said...
It wasn't playing Prince of Persia.
No, it was not.
Is that what you're saying?
Okay. He said, we did the stuff to the boy for about 30 minutes or an hour when a man came in. He grabbed the boy and started fucking him. The man was about 10 inches long and the boy screamed and the man was forcing his dick into the boy all the way. The man tossed him and put the boy right next to me and grabbed a gun and blew the boy's head off. They then forced me to fuck the dead boy up the ass. They made us kiss the boy's lips and eat him out. Then they made me do something I don't even want to write, so I won't. They'd been filming it. They cleaned us up and took us to a house. They had the film and they played it. As the men watched, they passed Nicholas and I around as if we were toys and sexually abused us. They made Nicholas and I screw each other. And one of the men put the dead boy's penis in mine and Nicholas's mouth. I didn't want to write this because the man forced me to bite the boy's penis and balls off. I was there for about 5 days.
It's such a good...
It's nicer this way.
I just feel like it's worse. I really think it makes the whole situation worse.
It's Mr. Rogers. Come on, what's so bad about Mr. Rogers?
You were going to play something to clean a palate, and I said... It should be like, you know, fart noises.
I said it should have been Pharrell's Happy song.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Why are you bringing Mr. Rogers into this? End this.
Because Mr. Rogers is the only good thing in this world.
That's very true.
He's the one pure good light that we have.
Now he's got a Jimmy Seville room somewhere.
No, he doesn't.
No, I know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that, Mr. Rogers.
Well, in a separate testimony, DeCamp said that Banaki told him that Larry King was smiling and laughing the whole time the film was being shown.
Of course he was. If he was just being like, I can't believe you guys filmed this, then I would question what he was doing.
Yeah.
And this is weird. This is a really weird thing. That he said that
I don't even want you to read this.
Yeah, I don't want to say it, but I'm not going to ignore the facts, Henry.
Yeah.
He said that they had stopped in Las Vegas on the way to Sacramento.
And Mike Tyson was there, and there was a tiger, and there was a bachelor party that they saw.
I love this movie.
Yeah.
But he said that the guy, the director of the snuff film that they picked up in Las Vegas, he named him as Hunter Thompson.
Hunter S. Thompson.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't believe that for a fucking second.
I think it's the least shocking information we've heard so far. You know, I don't possible, sure.
He was also working on the convention a lot, and I'm certain they picked him up. He was not the director of the snuff film.
I feel like, can we just say again?
Bite the kids, bite his balls.
Yeah. He was not the director of the snuff film.
Like the word party, I think we're using the word director wrong. The guy holding the camera. He wasn't Kubrick. He wasn't reinventing the wheel. It wasn't Space Odyssey.
We didn't see the movie.
That's true. Yeah, what if it was amazing?
Oh, God help me.
So now...
Yeah, it's horrible.
It's horrible. That's the worst thing I've ever read on air. It's the worst thing it's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
When you said a 10-inch man, I for some reason I just pictured Terry the Gnome. I really did.
Even Terry's just sitting there just going like, guys, this is a little bit much. Hey, guys, let's not do the thing with the dead boy, let's just go fuck a fox, right?
Yeah, Terry has a heart.
Yeah, Terry definitely has heart.
Absolutely. No, he just rapes animals.
That's it, and that's fine. I mean, that's acceptable at the very least. Comparatively acceptable.
Oh, comparatively exceptionally acceptable.
So now let's get into
It really puts in perspective like how weird it is, the idea that people like fucking dogs and stuff. Where it's like, fuck a dog if that's what you need to do.
Totally. Yeah,
that instead.
Yeah.
So now let's get to the investigation of the case. This is when, I don't know if this is when your stomach starts to really turn, because this is when you, after hearing all of that horrible shit, this is how you start to see this entire case slipping through the fingers of dozens of people that are trying to get this case put forward.
Nobody would believe these kids. Mm-hmm. Nobody would believe
them. No, that's not true. Like, no, people believe them after the grand jury testimony, after it came out, they did one Nebraska radio station did a poll, and they asked, like, is there some sort of pedophile ring going on in Omaha? 90% of the people that called in said yes. Like, the people in Nebraska, they knew something was up.
But at the same time, there are a lot of people who actively believe that Barack Obama's a fucking iguana. I'm talking about the FBI.
86%.
The FBI didn't believe in them. Yeah. The Child Protective Services did, and they did everything they could, but then they all say it again and again. When you watch Conspiracy of Silence, they're like, we bring the facts to the FBI, and then nothing would happen.
Yeah.
I think it's 87% of the people that believe in angels and things like that.
Yeah. Well, the first case that started leading investigators to Larry King was the Nellie and Kimberly Webb case in 1985. Okay. According to a Nebraska State Police report, the Nebraska Foster Care Review Board letter to the Attorney General, Nebraska Senate's Franklin Committee investigative report, and a 50-page report by Boys Town Welfare Case Officer Julie Walters, pedophile victims Nellie and Kimberly Webb detailed a massive child sex, homosexual, and pornography operation run out of Nebraska by Larry King with close ties directly to Congress and the White House. Nellie said that at these parties hosted at these bouts hosted by Larry King, she sat naked looking pretty and innocent, and guests could engage in any sexual activity they wanted.
And how old was she here?
She was 14 years old.
Okay.
Any sexual activity they wanted, but penetration was not allowed. Nellie said that's where she first met Vice President George Bush. She also met him again on Washington, D.C.
I just feel like he'd be so bad at these parties.
Who, George right? Bush?
Is George Bush a fucking swinger?
He's a swinger behind closed doors, man.
But you know, like his father was. His father was a real fucker. Preston Bush was another part of the Majestic 12, the original fucking MK Ultra group. These fucking people. And now we got a fucking cuddly George W. sitting around painting those terrible paintings of fucking Kim Jong-un all day.
Well, I think there were some good paintings. He had one about a dog that I thought was kind of good.
Yeah.
He had a dog one.
Well, you got to remember that George Bush Sr. was the director of the CIA.
Right.
Yes.
Before he was vice president, he was the director of the CIA. So he's down with some dirty, dirty, dirty shit.
He knows some things.
Very dirty shit.
Yeah.
So the other guy that came
socks.
In.
I'll tell you, a lot of socks on. I don't feel like they took their socks off.
Yeah. These sex parts. I don't think they took off their socks either.
Like,
yeah.
High socks.
Argyle.
Argyle. Yeah.
Sweaty glasses.
Yeah.
Reeking of scotch and cigars.
Not good. But, you know, I wanted to say this, though, and this is especially because it was came out in the 80s. There's a difference. I always like the way they lumped homosexuality in there. If it was just gay parties, I'd be like, yeah.
Of course.
Hell yeah.
Of course.
But for the most part, that's just all it was, which is, I mean, I feel like there was a lot of that where it was like these after parties. I don't think it was all, I mean, I hate to, I don't know, but it feels like it's all mixed in where it starts with just like, whatever your peccadillo is, come out to the after parties and you can get it. You know, you want drugs, you want men, you want women, and then it's just like, and for the spicier party goers,
you've got the
other room. Yeah.
Yeah. It starts with dudes blowing each other and then eventually goes to, you know, biting the dead boy's cock off.
Well, I don't think that that's where it starts. That seems like something Fred Phelps would say.
But. No, a lot of my parties start off with a group sing-along to Golden Slumbers.
I'm not talking about homosexuals. I'm talking about the government. Because these people, these same people that are doing this horrible shit, this is what's fucked up, is that these same people that are doing these things are the same people that rail against gay marriage.
Of course,
These are the same people. And you know what? I don't think, the more I think about it, I don't think that these people do this shit and then rail against gay marriage because they're ashamed of being homosexual. I think they rail against gay marriage because it's funny. They think that it's funny.
It gets them all goosed up for it, and they know they're doing something extra naughty.
No, that's totally true.
The whole fucking, you know, that's my view where I just want to I don't even want to kill these people. I just want to take them all and line them up and tar and feather them and fucking spank them in the town square and leave them in the stocks. We need to get rid of our government. Now, we just need to get rid of our government.
Yeah.
Well, then just another bunch of psychopaths will fill the vacuum. But I think that if you tar and feather them and spank them in the middle of the town, and
they're going to love it.
They're going to die. And they're going to love it. They're going to die doing what they loved.
And so the second piece of the puzzle in the lead up to the investigation was a man named Rusty Nelson.
Yeah, this is a funny name.
Rusty Nelson, he was reported in 86-87 by a mother who said that Nelson had tried to force her underage daughter to take naked pictures. Of course, investigators went to Rusty Nelson's apartment, his studio. They found lots of pictures of underage girls in various stages of undress.
Sure.
Rusty Nelson, they started following the money as far as how Rusty Nelson was able to afford this very nice studio, only taking pictures of little girls.
Yeah.
And they found that his rent was paid by none other than Larry King. He was also Larry King's personal photographer. And Nelson also stated years later in that civil trial in 1999 that as a private photographer for Larry King, his duties included taking photographs surreptitiously of specific people and to make sure to photograph certain people if they were close enough to be photographed together.
He's like a perverted.
There's one thing these guys knew what to do was cover their own fucking ass. But at the same time, it's out in the open. It's all out in the open. There's receipts. It's written on pieces of paper that they were there, that they're spending money on these people.
Yeah, that's one of the things where I would say no need for a receipt. Like a donut. He's sort of like a perverted Peter Parker, this fella. Spider-Man, taking all the wrong pictures.
I don't get a receipt for my coffee. You know what I mean? I don't get a receipt when I go to Starbucks. Why would you get a receipt for the dude that's taking pictures of the naked boys you're raping?
I guess you just need it for tax reasons. You got to have documents to...
I guess so.
Yeah.
So the third part of the third witness in the lead up to the investigation, Loretta Smith. Now, she told this guy, Officer Carmian, who had been investigating the other guy who had been investigating Rusty Nelson.
Yeah.
He also caught wind of this because Larry King's name came up in a report that Loretta Smith had made to a child services woman. With regards to Larry King, she said that she knows that he supports devil worship activities.
Okay.
Now, we are about to get into the satanic worship type stuff.
This is the cool stuff, technically.
Technically so. And this is very interesting because at this time in America, the satanic panic was in full swing.
Full swing. Like, well, I honestly, and this is the problem, and I think that's why it's a very complicated psychological game. You know that these kids are being basically told that they're crazy every time they come forward and they say that they're witnessing satanic ritual abuse. And so what you can do is that you can dress up in a big fancy robe and do a bunch of sick shit, and then when that kid tries to go and say that I was abused by a satanic cult, everyone calls him crazy. You're keeping the gaslighting going. You're keeping the logic on your side and making the victims look crazy.
And these are individuals who create the logic of the country, right?
Everything. They control the media. And again, if you look at all the people that they name, you know, you got the government, you've got the finance, you got the finance world, you got military, you've got entertainment, it's all over the map. It's every platform.
A lot of folks, a lot of different jobs.
So this girl, Loretta Smith, she had started attending these parties when she was about 11 years old. And the Satanist, or quote-unquote Satanist, when I say Satanist from now on, I use the term very loosely. I mean, essentially...
It's devil worshiper.
Devil worshiper, yeah. So the devil worshippers, they decided to test her, to try to bring her into the group.
They gave her like an ACT, an SAT test, something like that, to see if she was going to get
it
at Harvard.
It's like an ACT. It's kind of like an ACT. Yeah, it's kind of like that.
No essays, though. So
no essays. Okay, good. Yeah.
So in her first test, she was locked in a room with an infant. The men inside cut the little girl's head off, the infant's head off, stuck it on the wall and made her sit in front of it. She had to take the head off the wall, and the men held her down while they cut the eyes out of the little girl's head. Then they left Loretta and the body locked in the room for 24 hours while she could hear another girl screaming. The men returned and told Loretta that she had passed the test. Loretta identified two of the men as Larry King and a Mr. Finch, who she indicated was a high school principal. And additionally, she identified other men with names such as Ace, King Horse, Jerry Lucifer, and a man known simply as Mike.
Jerry now, Lucifer? That's Jerry the name Lucifer. He chose?
Jerry Lucifer.
If you're making up a satanic nickname on the spot, you're going to have a problem. Think about it ahead of time. Other one is, it's just like, these are the same people that are making abortion illegal.
Yeah.
And they do this to a child.
Yeah.
Seems extreme. I don't know. But
there are other sacrifices that she witnessed, like she saw a female get her head taken off by a saw. She saw a 4-year-old hung from the wall and had darts thrown at him. There was a little Indian girl that was about 3 or 4. She had several body parts cut off, after which it was ground and poured on the girls, and then they were made to drink the remains of the child. Now, let me ask you this. Why do I have a better time believing this than I do of Hunter S. Thompson directing a snuff film?
Because Hunter S. Thompson, because, you know, Hunter Thompson's a name.
Yeah.
Hunter Thompson's just a name. The idea that someone would make this up is so crooked and ridiculous. It's like this, even if just a fraction of what this is that happened.
If 1%
and she was like,
true.
If 1% of this is true, then all of those people should have been put to death.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if 1% of any one of these stories is true, and so you're just looking at fucking percentages, it comes down to get to a point of just like, even if one fact is right, even if it was just she was in a room with fucking Ace, King, Horse, Jerry, Lucifer, and Mike, and she was being used sexually, even if that was just a story, all those dudes should be in a fucking concrete square until they're skeletons.
Yeah.
Well, all right.
And the woman who took her testimony, her name was Carol Stitt. She said that the girl was very concrete about who was present, what was happening, the dates, specific information. And she said that, she works with children all the time. And she says one of the ways that you know it's not a fantasy is the details that they give you.
Sure.
And she wasn't going off the rails. It wasn't like, because you can compare this to like the Satanic Panic stuff, the McMartin preschool trial. That's just dumb shit. It doesn't make
kids
any
getting
sense
flushed down the toilets.
Yeah,
and
kids getting flushed down the toilet, being flown across the country, being buried alive in cemeteries.
But that's also, again, if you look at it, the idea that they were all drugged. That's my problem is that when it comes down to it, it's like I want to believe a kid.
Yeah.
Like if a kid's coming forward and saying this shit is happening, I must believe the child. And it comes down to it, it's like if they are getting laced with fucking LSD and they don't know what they're talking about, I mean, I don't know. It sounds like crazy. But, and then you look at that case. That case, they were saying that there was a tunnel built through the bathroom that went down. And it's like when he says he's flushed down the toilet, it's just a kid being a kid and then being drugged and taken.
All three of these together, the information is overlapping. Their information is getting corroborated between the webs, the woman who reported the Rusty Nelson trial, the Rusty Nelson investigation, which, by the way, nothing happened with that, and this girl. All three people, all three investigations implicate Larry King. The entire time, the police chief, this guy, fucking Robert Wadman, the entire
Wadman?
Time. Wadman?
Wadman. Of course.
Yeah, of course it's Wadman. So Wadman, the entire time, he's trying to sweep this under the rug. He's trying to tell the investigators, like, listen, back off. As soon as Larry King's name was mentioned in any of the as soon as the police chief heard that Larry King's name was mentioned in any of this stuff, he got his ass down to the officer and was like, hey, are you investigating Larry King? Don't
do it.
And people, it's only because Larry it's King. Like, because the man himself was not very important, but it was the shit that he had on people.
Yeah.
It's what people allow themselves to, when you feel like you need to belong or your ambition is so huge that you want to, you'll do anything to be president. Yeah. You'll do anything. Well, every politician that you love has done something fucked up.
Well, you always got to do a lot of, you got to break some eggs to make an omelet, as they say. But I'll tell you what I'm really learning here is big banks are good. You can't trust these credit unions. You can't trust them one bit.
Yeah, you'd never hear this happen in a Bank of America.
That's right. Citibank, no one, Chase Bank, where I'm at, no one's.
Citibank, you can bring your change in there and they just give you cash.
They do. And
you don't even have to be a customer.
You don't even have to be, And they bring
you pants.
They give your dogs, a dog treat, which is kind of nice. These credit unions, they're having sex with all your kids. But,
Occupy was wrong. And that was what Occupy was talking about. What if Occupy is a part of it?
Oh, it is.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. So all of this investigative stuff, this is all background. It doesn't start really getting going. The investigation doesn't start going until the Franklin Committee is formed. And you know what? We're at an hour already, and we've got
at an hour.
Well, let's do a three-parter with it.
Let's do a three-parter. Yeah. We have to do it because we're just now at the investigative committee.
Very good. Well,
the cover-up has only begun, Ben.
I know. I'm happy you're going to be tortured for another week. That's always nice. Yeah,
this is a heavy episode.
And of course, we always bring levity to the situations, but this one's a little bit heavier than most. But
it's a little heavier, yeah.
But it's interesting, and it's good to know. And of course, it's good to be aware of the possibility that at any point in time you're voting for somebody who is a terrible, maniacal supervillain.
Don't take anybody by how they look and how they sound.
Do some research on them.
Do some research on him. Like the really
just
only
ask if they know Larry King. Like the first question you ask any politician: do you know Larry King? And if they say
not goofy suspenders Larry King, child or prostitute Larry King,
or you catch them and they say like black like Afro Larry King or suspender wearing Larry King, and they're like black Afro Larry King, and they say, oh no, I don't know him.
No,
very interesting the way you raise your voice, and then I didn't even mention. I thought, of course. of the famous Larry King. And again, this Larry King should be more famous. This is our Coney 2012.
Yeah.
We got to make this Larry King more famous than the actual relatively good person Larry King.
This guy is a fuck. He needs to be found wherever he is, and he needs to be pulled out from whatever rock he's hiding on over, and he needs to be embarrassed.
He's gone.
And this shit should never leave him.
Embarrassed.
It should never leave him. It should exist like a stink on him for the rest of his life.
Sounds like you're going to make him wear a dress in the town square on Tuesday.
He should be hung by...
You will be embarrassed, Mr. King.
I mean, I would love that punishment. I'd love that, to see that every day, him have... come out with like dressed like a cow with a big bell on, and a guy dressed as a farmer throwing eggs at him. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that would be amazing.
That would be fun.
But I mean, honestly, again, any jokes that we're making here is just because this is a comedy podcast.
Yeah.
And we have to deal with
doing our best.
We have to deal with this shit somehow.
All right. Well, that's the whole show for today, and we'll come. I think this is our first three-parter.
This is absolutely our first three-parter. Yeah.
Yeah.
First three-parter. Hail Satan, everyone. True Satan, the bringer of knowledge, not the hider of secrets.
Yes, the illuminator.
That's right. And of course, hail yourselves. And that's Henry Loves You on Twitter. That's Marcus Parks on Twitter. I'm at Ben Kissel on Twitter. And hail yourselves. And
Hal Gein.
Play that. Play that song.
Be careful out there.
Yeah, just be careful, guys. Yeah. And just remember.
It's such a good
feeling
to know you're alive. It's such a happy feeling. You're growing inside. And when you
that's
wake
such a
up
sinister
tale. Yeah, now it's actually kind of ruined the song.
I think we should have went with the... That's what I'm saying. We should have went with the farts.
It's such a good
feeling. It makes me feel better. I mean, I think there's something wrong with you guys. There's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
No. It's sweet. It's sweet. When the it's very sweet and very nice.
And I'll have more.
It does make it sound really bad.
And you'll have things you'll talk about.